Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ sanghaṃ namassāmi. So tonight I'd like to talk about an aspect of practice which I'm calling creating a sacred space. And I'm talking about creating a sacred space in our mind to revisit episodes in our life history, in our life story, that have been significant for us and which very often have a bearing on how we are living life right now. And this came about for two reasons. One is that today is Anzac Day, and this is a very good example of what I'd like to encourage us to do in our practice. And the other was because we recently had the scattering of ashes at the monastery for one of our supporters, who has died. And as we were setting up the physical place where those ashes were going to be scattered and setting up some sort of physical symbol of where those ashes were going to be scattered, it was very obvious that we were creating some sort of space that people could come into in which they could remember that person and think about that person. And connecting to that physical place and having that tangible connection to the person is one of the ways which we create space in an outer form. The other way that we create this sort of space for revisiting events or relationships in our life is by having an annual anniversary, a time in that we take a look at something again on a maybe an annual basis, but on a regular basis. So New Year or birthdays can also provide us with the opportunity to look anew at something. So Anzac Day is a very good example of this sort of place coming around and being created in time every year on the 25th of April. We revisit Anzac Day, and we think particularly of those who've died in armed conflict, and we think about our relationship to that. And this is one of the very important aspects of what I'm pointing towards tonight, is that every event, for every event, there is the event and there is our relationship to it. And the way that we relate to Anzac Day, I can say from my own experience, has gone through many changes over the course of my life. When I was a school child, Anzac Day was a day which was spoken about particularly as a time when Australia first became a nation, when troops first fought under the flag of Australia as a separate force with the New Zealanders. And then later on, it came to be considered that it was an example of how Australian colonial troops had been used, perhaps not so well, by the English High Command. And it was an example of being taken advantage of, the troops being used in a particular way that was a flawed engagement from the start, the way that it was planned and what was done with the troops. And then later on, as I grew up and Anzac Day came around, there was a sense of this was just a glorification of war and it wasn't a good thing. We shouldn't be doing this. We should let memories of war fade away rather than to glorify what had been done in the past. And then later still, throughout, as time passed, there was a sense of separating out what was done by governments and what was done by colonial or powers that be, and really concentrating on the individual soldiers or servicemen and women who'd given their lives or been willing to give their lives, sacrifice themselves for sake of liberty, for keeping this country free from armed invaders. And I think in recent years there has been an emphasis on this much more than on any sort of glorification of war or any sense of looking at it from the vantage point of the powers that were in control. There's much more the emphasis on the individual story. And we can see even this year where this is the first time that the Western Front has been made much of, the Western Front that was fought in the First World War, where many, many more servicemen lost their lives than at Gallipoli. And in the past, Gallipoli has always been the focal point. So over the course of years, there's been a change, a shift in emphasis in the way that we look at Anzac Day and what we do in the commemoration. And now I think there's a very strong emphasis on appreciating the sacrifice that servicemen and women and many civilians also made and are making to keep this country free. We may be talking about a different kind of freedom that we are talking about in Buddhist practice, where we're emphasizing the freedom of the mind. But nonetheless, it's a sacrifice for us to be free. And it's quite appropriate from the Buddhist perspective to be aware of our gratitude to those who've fought and been willing to fight and who've sacrificed their lives. There's a strong emphasis in Buddhist practice and Buddhist culture on appreciating what's been done for us by those who've gone before us. So in that respect, we can also appreciate what's been done for us by servicemen and women throughout the course of our history. But the point is that our relationship to Anzac Day changes according to how events are viewed. And that may be according to our personal view of things or how they are portrayed to us and the kind of emphasis that we receive in the way that history is taught or in the things that are given priority in the way that we hear about the events of that time. And so this is a very good example of how being able to revisit this episode or episodes in history over time allows us to reassess and reevaluate and change the way that we see things and the way that we feel about them today. This is something that we do with the events of our own life, that by having regular times during the year when we think about those who have been part of our life, who have now passed away, or think about events that have been significant to us, or go to a physical place that reminds us of our relationship with those people or that event. For example, going to the cemetery or going to the place where we spent time together. That allows us to revisit our relationship to that person and to that event, and to allow for the change that takes place naturally in that relationship. So, for example, when someone dies, around the time that they die, there may be some very strong emotions about grief and loss. There may be frustration or sadness because one couldn't do more for the person who's died. There may be unresolved anger with that person, some problems in the relationship. And at the time that they pass away, those emotions are so strong that they colour our attitude to that person and to their passing away. And what it means to us in our life, we have to go on living. How do we do that? And very often, because of the intensity of the time that that person's death has been to us, we can only see aspects of that person or aspects of that relationship. The emotions are too strong to see things in a fuller perspective. And it's very helpful if we can understand that. Understand, yes, the emotions are very strong now, and that's just natural. And to understand that they aren't the whole picture. And to understand that they will naturally change. Over time, they will naturally change. Now, sometimes we can resist this because we think we should always feel the intensity that we felt then. The intensity of grief, for example, or the intensity of being done harm by someone. And we artificially try to hang on to those intense emotions, sometimes because it makes us really feel alive, makes us really feel that that intensity is something that we want. We don't want anything less than that. And so artificially we try to keep things at that level. But other times we feel that we shouldn't get back to normal. We shouldn't start to pick up the pieces. We shouldn't be happy again. Somehow there's a feeling of feeling badly because things are naturally changing. And so it's very helpful if we can realize, yes, things will naturally change over time. And creating this opportunity to go back from time to time to revisit that relationship, to revisit that experience, can give us the opportunity to actually be aware of the changes that have taken place and to allow them to be there and to incorporate them into the way that we go about dealing with our life now. So having the place to go back to, the memorial place, having the time coming around every year, gives us this sacred space in which to observe our relationship and the changing relationship that we have with this person, this event, this thing in our life. Sometimes making the adjustments that happen are very difficult. And to be allowed to have time to make the adjustments is very helpful. Not to think that everything has to be done in a very short space of time. Get it over and done with. Get it out of the way. So, for example, if we've been in a relationship with someone who's died and that person has played the role always of making the decisions in the relationship and perhaps even telling us we were incapable of making decisions if we didn't have that person with us, then to get used to being without that person is one thing. How do we make decisions when we haven't really had to do it before? How do we ease ourselves into that? But how do we also cope with the fact that we can make decisions without this person being there? How do we allow that to be without thinking, oh, that's somehow being disloyal? That's not what I've been told. How do I grow into the new situation and be at ease with it? This will take time. And if we understand that, and if we give ourselves the opportunity to go back and revisit that relationship again over time, then we can start to allow the differences, the changes to take place. We can notice them and we can work with them. This can actually allow us to move on rather than tethering us to something that has changed but which we're holding up as being fixed and unchanging. So having these physical monuments or physical reminders of someone, or also having this time when we go back to look at that person or that situation, is a way of giving us space to do the work, to process what's taking place. Changes that may be fundamentally new and which have to be worked with over time. Allowing us to go back and see things that we didn't see before. Recently, I was talking to someone who was telling me about their perception or feeling about their family life, that it was perfect until something happened in their family, which was a tragedy. And when I spoke with that person and we revisited what was the perfect family situation before the tragedy, it was an opportunity to see things in a different perspective. Because part of the sorrow that that person was feeling was the idea that there had been perfection in the past and that something had come along to cause it to change, to lose its perfection. And we can have that idea about things in our life or our life until an event happens, till a person dies or still till some big change comes along. And if we don't go back and revisit our original assumptions, we can be trying to build a life around something that was never a reality in the first place. So the idea that there was a perfect family that was never going to change, that's really a fantasy. It's not truth. Because just as children grow up, naturally they change. And as children grow up and change, family dynamics change. So the image that I, or the teaching that I passed on to this person, was a teaching that Ajahn Chah very often gave. And that was, the glass is already broken. This teaching, the very powerful teaching, Ajahn Chah would hold up a glass and he would ask people to say, "What's this that I'm holding up?" And they'd say, "Well, it's a glass." And then he'd say, "Can you see the crack?" And they would look at it and see only a whole glass, nothing wrong with that glass. And he would say, "The crack is already there. You just can't see it. To me, the glass is already broken." And that teaching is to say that everything that comes into existence already has seed of its ending there. Nothing lasts forever. And even if it lasts for a very long time, it doesn't stay without changing. Even if the changes that are taking place are so subtle that we can't see them, those changes are taking place right from the very beginning. So for an enlightened mind, the glass is already broken. And so why get so attached to this glass, knowing that one day it's not going to be there anymore? And so for this person who was clinging to the idea that there had been a perfect family and that perfect family had been torn asunder by this one event, as they heard that teaching, they realized so much of their suffering was coming from a wrong understanding of what they were working with in their life anyway, and trying to have this idea of something fixed and stable that was never going to change is just unrealistic, going against nature. So revisiting that family and that family life is not to deny that it was good, that it was happy, it was a wonderful family situation, but to say that it was perfect and to expect that it was never going to change, well, that's a source of suffering, because it does change. It will change. It will change even if nothing drastic happens. That's just the nature of things. And so changing our perspective on things is another part of this creating the space, and I'm saying calling it the sacred space, to go back and reassess, revisit things which we have fixed in our mind as being a certain way or having been a certain way, or they would have done this for me or would have provided this for me if only that hadn't happened. Changing our perspective at the very least, knows that things will change even if nothing drastic happens. That is just the nature of things. That is just the nature of life. So then how do we change our perspective knowing that things will change? Well, sometimes we can change our perspective because life allows us to look back using the experience we've gained to see that things that we thought were a disaster were not really so disastrous after all. There were some positives too. So, for example, someone was telling me the other day that their daughter is so much wiser than they are. And the mother was saying, I don't know how you managed to be so wise and to do things so well. And her daughter said to her, well, Mum, you made so many mistakes when you were bringing me up. I learned from those. I learned not to do them and to do things differently. And at first, the person was, oh, fancy being told that. And then she thought, well, actually, that's very good. It was very good that, not that I made the mistakes, but that my daughter was able to learn from them and not to repeat them. And the benefit is here now, in the present, because my daughter's much wiser and does things more skillfully. Now, looking back with a different perspective, and because of having practiced using the Buddha's teachings and developing the mind in meditation, this person was able to accept that. Ah, looking at it differently, I can see the positives in it rather than just dwelling on the negatives. This is how we change our perspective. So when someone dies and the grief is very strong and the sense of loss is very strong, that can take up the whole of our mind. So what we encourage, even at the time when grief is very strong, is to change the perspective that we have. And instead of just getting lost in the grief, ask ourselves, why is it that I'm feeling this loss so badly? What was it about that person or my relationship to that person that was so important and so precious that I missed them so much? And so we think about the good qualities of that person. Rather than just focusing on their absence, we think about what they have given to us in our relationship, in our life together. And we deliberately think about those qualities and wish for that person, wherever they are reborn, may they have those same endearing qualities, those same lovely qualities that made them so special, so precious. And wherever they are reborn, may they be in circumstances and with people who have those qualities too and who give them the same sort of support and love and happiness that they gave to us. Now, this is not denying the sadness we may feel at the loss, but it's changing the perspective. It's changing from dwelling on the unwholesome, the sadness, the grief, the loss, unwholesome because it brings us misery, not because it's bad, but because it brings us misery. Changing our perspective to dwell on the positive, that is, the good qualities of that person and wishing them well. This is a way we support our own mind and we support the mind of the person who's died. If they're in a place of reborn where they can still be in touch with us, then they receive our good wishes and our positive energy. That's a source of support for them. So changing our perspective doesn't mean denying what else might be part of our feeling at that time, but it's enlarging the scope of our view of the whole thing and not just getting overwhelmed with one emotion only. Now, if we create the sort of space in our mind, even if we don't have the physical, tangible connection through some sort of memorial or object, and even if we don't revisit that relationship at the same time every year, we can create the space in our own mind to go back and look at that relationship, at that event, at that person from time to time. Now, if we are trying to do this, we need to be skillful. We're not talking about going back and rehashing old wounds. So we don't go back when the mind is disturbed or the mind is overwhelmed by negative emotions like anger or confusion or jealousy. If we do that, we will just increase those emotions when they are arising. So what we're talking about, if this is going to be useful, is to support the mind by cultivating wholesomeness and support the mind in meditation. So the practice that we did this evening in using the body as a focus of our attention and moving first of all through the body and then to the breath and then using our attention on the breath on one object to allow a feeling of ease to arise in the mind and then feeding that feeling back to the body as a way of generating loving kindness. If we generate loving kindness to the body, then that flows back to the mind. If we generate loving kindness to the mind, that flows back to the body. So doing this sort of simple practice, stopping, resting, giving ease, narrowing the focus of our awareness into one object, one soothing object like the breath, and then feeding that ease back to the body. This is a way of building up the strength of the mind, the peace of the mind, the tranquility of the mind. Then we are developing a platform from which we can go back to revisit these events in our life, or these relationships, the relationship that we have to the events in our life. We need to develop the mind first so that we can get a broader perspective. Otherwise, when we go back to revisit the events, we will go back mainly to rehash the things that remind us of that event, those circumstances. It'll be very hard to stand back with some detachment and not be overwhelmed by the emotion of it. So we need to strengthen the emotional purity of the mind by doing loving kindness. And then as we develop this loving kindness, we can also move on to develop compassion. Compassion is the sincere wish that we may be free of suffering and that others may be free of suffering, and recognizing that our happiness is so much bound up with the happiness of others. And particularly if we have unresolved anger or ill will towards people or events from the past, we recognize that while ever we hang on to that ill will and anger, we are harming ourselves first of all. And so going back to revisit something can be an indication to us that we need to do some work for the benefit of ourself, first of all. And so we use loving kindness as the platform, and we then move on to developing compassion. Developing compassion, as I said, is a sincere wish that we might be free of suffering, that others may be free of suffering. So when we recognize there's unfinished business, then we work to allow that, to recognize that there is this unfinished business and see what we can do about it. Sometimes we can change our attitude, we can change our perspective, and sometimes we've now come to a point where we can actually do something practical to ease that situation that we couldn't do before. Because time has passed, because the emotions are not so raw anymore, perhaps we see things slightly differently than we did at the time that they took place. Perhaps we can now see something that we could do to ease that relationship, or at least ease our relationship with that event that we couldn't see before because our emotions were too disturbed, too intense. So sometimes when we try to change our perspective and when we generate loving kindness and compassion without even deliberately trying to find some way to work with that situation, some sort of thing to be done to ease, just arises obviously in the mind. So sometimes when we revisit a hurt or a disappointment or a resentment, it's just enough to see it in a different perspective. But sometimes it's very useful to go and speak to the person that was involved in that and perhaps apologize, or perhaps ask to hear their side of the story, or perhaps just to forgive them for whatever happened at that time. Sometimes it may be something that's so painful that we're still not able to forgive, still not ready to forgive, but at least we start to develop the understanding that whatever we harbour, anger and resentment, that is not for our well-being. And so it's worth continuing to work on the situation, continuing to work on our relationship to the situation, worthwhile revisiting it from time to time and seeing what changes have taken place naturally in our attitude and what changes we can bring into our mind so that we can no longer be so pushed around by our relationship to that thing. This is a practice which takes place over the whole of our life. There'll be episodes or events in our life which we may still be processing after many years. And that's the last thing I'd like to say, is that it's very important that we feel able to work at our own pace, not to compare ourselves with others and think that we should be able to get through this because other people have, or get through faster, or we shouldn't say to people, you should get over this. Each of us will have to work at things at our own pace. But if we are open to continuing to work at things, then that's the way that we're going to be able to process them and come to terms with them for our own well-being and also for the well-being of those with whom we share our life. So may this teaching be of benefit to all of you, and may the merit of this teaching help us all to attain Nibbana.
Arahan Sama Sambuddho Bhagava Buddham Bhagavan Sanabhivade Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammam Namasami Supatipanno Bhagavato Sāvaka Sangho Sanghaṃ Namāmi.